The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net, and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. The pre-med year, session number 570. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Welcome to The Pre-Med Years. Thank you so much for joining me today. I have a phenomenal guest on, but before we talk to Shay, I want to talk about the MCAT Minute brought to you by Blueprint MCAT. Did you know, if you go over to blueprintmcat.com, register for a free account at blueprintmcat.com, you get access to a free full-length exam, a free half-length diagnostic, free flashcard platform, and most importantly, what I think is most important, an amazing study planner tool to help you craft the perfect MCAT study plan for you. Again, go over to blueprintmcat.com, sign up for that free account, and get started today. So as we go through our episodes here at the Pre-Med Years, we have some episodes that stand out above others, and I think this is going to be one that potentially stands out above others. We have a former Green Beret military member in our audience today, as our guest today, not an audience, as our guest, but someone who went to undergrad at 17 years old and basically failed out. If he didn't fail out, he ended up stopping on purpose to go do some stuff, which we'll hear in a minute, but he didn't do very well. And he, as soon as he kind of came back to the academic world, the first person he met to get some advice on going to medical school, gave him the cold shoulder. You're going to hear all of that as we jump into our conversation with Shay, former Green Beret Army medic to medical student. Shay, welcome to the pre-med years. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Dr. Ryan. How are you doing?
Dr. Ryan, I told you to knock that off. Shay, I love starting these episodes with, when did you first realize you wanted to be a physician?
So I did not realize that I wanted to be a physician until I was actually in the military. So I am currently in year 4 of 5 of the MD-MBA program here at the University of Colorado. But prior to that, I was a Special Forces Medical Sergeant for the United States Army, otherwise known as a Green Beret. And it's funny that you asked that because when my wife and I were about to get married and we already knew that I was going to join the military, she was like, well, and this probably isn't a long-term thing. You said you don't want to retire, so what would you like to do? And I was like, I'm not really sure. I don't really know. And she's like, well, I mean, would you be a doctor? I was like, that's so dumb. Why would anybody go to medical school? Like,
it's so long. So I want to know why she led with that.
Oh, she was like, you're really intelligent.
Oh, you're smart. So be a doctor.
Right. I had tricked my wife by that point. She'd already agreed to marry me. So here we are. So, yeah. And I mean, that was part of it. I'd never wanted to do that. I don't have anybody else in my family that is a part of the medical community, really. And so it wasn't until I was in the Special Forces qualification course. And obviously, as a medic, like, we're going to get a lot of medical training. And I had the opportunity to go rotate down at Tampa, Florida, and also out in Morgantown, West Virginia, that I had the ability to be exposed to that. And here I was working in ORs, working in ERs, working around these doctors with high degrees of acumen and self-assurance, which was exactly what I wanted out of my career in the military and what I liked about working with my military peers. And they were also practicing that PACE plan, or the primary alternate contingency emergency, that we're taught from square one of, like, this is how you plan something and this is how you execute and this is what you do if things go wrong, because everything always goes wrong and you should be ready for that. And I'm like, wow, this really speaks to me. I really enjoy this environment. I like the stress, And it was kind of at that point that I was like, yep, this is what I'm going to be pursuing when I'm done with my career.
Nice. All right. So let's kind of go step by step. When did you join the military? How old were you?
So I joined the military at 23.
At 23. What were you doing before then?
Before then, I'd gone to BYU for a year. Okay. And I had served a 2-year mission for my church. So I'd been on a mission trip for 2 years down in Georgia and South Carolina. I actually ran the religious services for the East Coast Marines on Parris Island.
Wow.
I go there every Sunday. And that taught me two things. It taught me I didn't want to be a Marine, but I definitely wanted to be in the military.
Okay.
And so that was kind of the start of the military journey. But then I got home, was trying to get back into going to school, was trying to get residency back in Utah. And that was when my wife and I got married, and I kind of decided I'm either going to wait for the specific special forces contract I want to come up, or I'm going to go to school, and whichever one of those comes first is the route I'll pursue. And the contract came up while I was dating my wife, and she said, yeah, that's great. I really support you. I probably spent 2 hours trying to talk her out of it. And then she said, yeah, that's fantastic. The only thing I want to do is get married first. I said, I've been trying to convince you to marry me.
So, yeah, done.
That's great. Let's go.
Yeah. So your first year at BYU, what were you thinking about your future in terms of what you were doing? What were you majoring in if you declared a major at that point?
I didn't. This is back in 2006. I didn't have anybody else in my family that had a bachelor's degree. It was just, I was buying into that dream of what do you do after high school? You go to college.
You go to college. Okay. Yeah.
That's fine. I never met with any advisors, which I advise against. And I really like crashed and burned going out there. I think the only classes I passed in that first year were racquetball and calculus. The rest of them were F's across the board.
Wow.
I didn't know.
Okay.
I wasn't focused, and I wasn't aware of what I wanted to do.
Yeah. What did you, do you remember what your GPA was after that first year?
Ooh, so I had taken some college classes while in high school.
Okay.
I mean, if you're talking about my GPA at BYU.
Yeah, at BYU,
like,
yeah.
I don't know, like a 0.6.
It was low.
Cumulatively. Yeah,
Okay.
I don't know, maybe like a 2.
Okay. So that whole thing about your wife saying you're intelligent, again, you kind of pulled a fast one on her, huh?
Right. Yeah. It's very convincing.
So you go and do your mission, right? Which is obviously part of your faith. So that's kind of planned to, was that the plan to always leave after first year, or did you leave because your grades, you're like, this is not for me, so I'm going to go do my mission now?
No, the plan was definitely to leave after first year, because I was 17 when I graduated high school. And
got
so
it.
I had a bit of a gap before I could go out and serve.
Okay. So you go out on your mission, you find this interesting world of the military. You join the military. When you joined, obviously joining the Army, not as cool as the Air Force, but that's okay. We won't hold it against you. Did you specifically seek out being a medic, or was that something as part of like the ASVAB and competency stuff? They're like, oh yeah, you're going to be a medic.
So I knew that I wanted to be part of special operations.
Okay.
And I looked at all of the different special operations forces from across the United States military branches. And I decided, based on a lot of factors, gear, mission set, cool guy status, whatever you want to, you know, however you want to boil it down, that I wanted to do the special forces, the Green Beret work. So, and at that point, okay, then you dial it down even further. If I had my choice, which one of those jobs in special forces, because for anybody who's unacquainted, they operate as independent teams, which means you have to have medics, you have to have engineers, you have to have communication sergeants, you have to have weapons sergeants, and then your leadership, because they have to be self-contained. Which one of those jobs would I really want? And I decided, well, I've always liked physical activity. I think physiology is quite interesting. So let's go the medic route and we'll see if I'm any good at it. And so joining the military, I joined going through the normal combat medic 68 whiskey course down in San Antonio. And then directly after that, I went to airborne school. And then after that, I went to the Special Forces Assessment and Selection Program and got picked up for training from there.
And how far into that training did you realize, oh, this is kind of cool. I like this medicine stuff.
Yep. So after being chosen, because they separate you out there as far as your jobs are concerned, to go through the 18 Delta pipeline or the Special Forces Medical Sergeant pipeline, the first place that they sent us, and this has changed because they're always changing the order of schools up, but the first place they sent us was the Special Operations Combat Medic course, or SOCOM. And that's a 9-month school. And I really liked it from square one, right? I'd say that even learning about your basic EMT and paramedic work, I was like, this is really interesting. I like this idea of acute critical stabilization, trying to get somebody to a higher echelon of care, which was obviously going to be the job description. I'd say that I wasn't 100% sold on pursuing medicine until I had the opportunity to work in the hospital, to work around those people who had been doing it forever. And it was at that point that I was like, I'm bought into this. I don't know if I want to do MD, DO, PA, whatever the route is, but this is the field that I want to specialize in. And we'll work out the details, you know, after a little bit more experience.
Yeah. Let's talk about how you got to that decision, because I think a lot of students in your, or not students at the time, but just people out in the world, whether they're military, out in the corporate world, wherever, especially starting off with your first year of undergrad, where it's like, hey, these are lots of S here. A lot of people wouldn't allow themselves the opportunity to think, what if? Why, number one, did you give yourself permission to explore knowing that you struggled academically? And number two, how did you end up getting to this decision of MD, DO, actual physician versus any of the other career fields out there?
Absolutely. I think that to answer your first question, it's a combination of blind self-assuredness and really ignorance about the process. Right, I didn't know what it took to go to medical school or what kind of GPA was necessary in order to get into PA school. I just knew that the Army had asked me if I wanted to try out for Special Forces, and I said yes, and I got all the way through the Special Forces training pipeline, and that all along the way, as I'm working with other providers, they're saying, you have a knack for this, you're good. If you want to pursue this, you should. And so that just fueled my drive to go through it. And it's part of that is overcoming those failures, right? That is the biggest play all the way through, is that you're going to have times where things are difficult. You're going to have times where patient interactions go poorly. You're going to have tests that you don't do well on. You're going to have to study for step one and step two. And just overcoming those challenges and those failures, the military had taught me to have confidence in spite of that failure. And so that's one of the things that I'm very grateful for, because it wasn't something that I'd experienced until that first year at BYU, and then it crushed me.
Yeah.
And then I really had to be rebuilt about that from that point.
Yeah.
I want to
stop you there before we get to the second question, because I think that's something, right? You use the word rebuilt. It's something that I think, unless people go through military training, boot camp, whatever you want to call it, right? And I, as a commissioned officer, went through like baby boot camp. mine was nowhere near anything that you've done. The general thought, at least as far as I understand it, is they break you down so that they can build you back up. And so I'm assuming a lot of your military training just gave you the confidence that no matter what, you can figure it out.
Yes. I mean, and that is the point, is that they want you to experience failure repeatedly so that it's not something that stops you, because you're going to fail at things. And then they teach you the techniques to be able to push through that failure till you get to the point where you're successful.
Yeah.
And I had experienced that. And that is critical. I think that's a critical life skill, regardless of whatever field you're going into, because you're not always going to be successful.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right. So second question, how did you end up at the physician level versus PA or any other healthcare route?
Well, it had to do with the experiences that I'd had down in Tampa and in the ORs at Morgantown, West Virginia, where I'd gotten to work with anesthesiologists. And of all the places that I really liked, the OR was my favorite. And watching how anesthesiologists work and approach their work and how they thought really, really resonated with me. And I was like, this is exactly what I want to do. I want to be able to take a bird's eye view of the problem. I want to be able to look at a situation and then get a snapshot of where I'm at, where I'm going, and what I need to do, and then all the things that could go wrong, right? And anesthesiology, for anybody who's never been there, is it's really simple seeming until it's not. And then everything's on you,
yep.
Which as a Special Forces Medical Sergeant was exactly kind of what my job was. My job is to prepare. My job is to think of all the contingencies, to study the areas we're going to, mm-hmm. and then prepare for what's going to go wrong when we do that.
Yeah.
And everything's fine until it's not. And then everybody looks at you. And that's a lot of times what happens in the ORs. Everything's fine until it's not. And then there's a lot of communication and it's all hands on deck. But I really like that pace. Mm. And that really appealed to me. So then it's, okay, this is what you'd like to do as a physician. Which routes are you going to be able to do that as a PA? Are you going to go the CRNA route, or are you going to go full-blown anesthesiologist? So that really narrowed down the field. And I just thought about what do I want to be able to do? I want to be able to contribute as much as possible to a team and be as trained and capable as possible in the event that somebody's life is in my hands. It's very serious to me. And so, well, which route is going to offer me that? And that was the MD route. I want to learn as much as I can about physiology. I want to get as many clinical hours in. I want the residency hours so that I can trust myself to be capable if I'm by myself and something's going wrong.
Yeah.
So that was kind of how I landed on that.
What do you think has led to you kind of, if I were to classify you, it sounds like you're a thrill seeker. It sounds like you like that stress. You like the adrenaline. You seek out those opportunities. Where do you think that comes from in your upbringing or just your personality?
I mean, that's hard to say. Nature versus nurture. I've always liked, you know, martial arts, the thrill of almost getting hit and or getting hit, right? Wrestling, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, that physicality, that's always been very exhilarating to me. Mm-hmm. And then the Army didn't do me any favors in trying to overcome that with throwing me out of airplanes. And, you know, I was able to go to the Halo skydiving school, and that was fantastic and really fed into that. So I would say for me, it's probably one of those inborn traits where most of my life, I really do like the peace and tranquility. I mean, I've got four kids and one on the way, so you wouldn't know it by the way I live and the MD, MBA, but I do want that every once in a while, that chaos that comes and the ability to create order out of that chaos.
Yeah.
That's something that fundamentally appeals to me.
Yeah. So let's talk about you. You come to the decision, okay, I want to be a physician. I want to be a full-blown anesthesiologist. Where was the decision for you to not just finish your military career, have that stability of pension and all that stuff, and then go to medical school versus taking the leap, leaving the military, going to medical school, or going back and doing more undergrad stuff, or maybe you did that while you were still in?
Yeah, that's... I really have to credit my first team sergeant. After graduating the Special Forces qualification course, getting to a team, having a sit down with him and him being like, hey, we get to know a lot of new guys all the time. What's your plan? What do you want to do? Are you here for life? Are you here to become a warrant officer? Are you trying to go traditional officer route? What would you like? I said, well, while I was in the Q, or the Special Forces Q course, I really fell in love with medicine and I really would like to pursue that. I'm here to give my all to the team. I'm here to do everything you need me to do. You know, I've worked for years to earn this hat and to be ready to be on a team with everybody and these like-minded individuals, but this is my ultimate passion and where I see myself ending up in 40 years. And he point blank just looked at me and said, well, then you need to get out. And I said, oh, like that's not like, he says, there's like the Delta course is long. The Army invests a lot of time and money, and it's hard to get us trained because there's a high rate of failure in that course. I think we had over 50% of my Special Operations Combat Medic course alone failed out or had to roll to different classes. So like, okay. Can I ask why? And he's like, because you'll never do it. It's like every 18 Delta that comes to the team and that I've seen says the same thing, and they never do it because they get caught up.
Yeah.
They get caught up in going to schools, and they're here, and the tempo is a lot quicker than you think it's going to be. And there's never enough time, especially if you haven't, and I didn't at the time, I didn't have my undergrad done. I didn't have my prereqs done. It's like, if you're not 100% set up to do this, you're never going to have time to do that.
And love it.
I was an 18 Delta before I was a team sergeant. That's what I did. And I had the same goals and aspirations. And so if you want to do this, you have to make it happen, which means you need to get out. Mm. If you don't, then you need to change what your actual goal is. He's like, I'll support you either way. Like, you're here, you're squared away. We have work to do. But I'm just letting you know how it's going to be if you choose this route. And that was, I was like, thank you. And I talked to my wife about it, and she was like, yep, that's makes sense given the amount of time and dedication and commitment that it takes in order to get into medical school. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point, I was like, okay, like I did my schools, I did my trainings, I did my combat deployment over in the Middle East. And when I got back, I was like, okay, it's time to plan my exit strategy and figure out what this whole med school thing is and how I can be best set up for success in order to achieve that goal.
Yeah. So where did you go seek that information? Again, you mentioned earlier, don't really come from a family of physicians or people going to undergrad. Again, there's a lot of, I think, unknown ignorance, if you want to call it that, of just the whole process that allowed you to continue down the process, which is wonderful. But where do you go and get that information, and where do you go and get the confidence to potentially start doing better in undergrad?
So my wife at the time was working at the University of Utah. So that's where I applied to and enrolled, and I rectified my initial mistakes from going to BYU, which is to say that I met with advisors and I went to the orientation tours and I figured out exactly what classes the majority of MD and DO schools required and what they were looking for. So I went and sought out the resources that were available to me at the school. And then from there, I decided on my major, and I was like, just whatever your shortest, quickest, most flexible major is. Because at this point, we have two kids and I'm going to be stay at home dad / go to school dad. And so I'm like trying to balance the logistics, and I'm okay, I have to get biochem done, I have to get OChem 2 done, I have to get all these classes done, and I have to take care of the kiddos, and I have to finish this. And it's like, what do I do? How do I balance this? And I started looking online, and then I found you and your podcast. I was like, this is really great information that I wish that I'd had prior, because I could have been studying it and planning, you know, years ago when I had finally decided that I was going to go through the medical school process. Mm-hmm. And I just planned it out. I mean, every day is planned out for me, and that started a long time ago. And now I continued that on, and it's that 25 meter target, 50 meter target, 75 meter target that you're constantly looking at. Mm-hmm. What do I have to get done, and how can I be successful? And the more you do that, and the more you are successful in reaching those goals, at the end of the day, reflecting on what you got done, what you still have left to do, re-sifting the importance, mm-hmm. the more successful you'll be at being able to do that until it's just automatic.
Yeah.
And after doing that over and over and over in the military, I was finally able to do that in the academic realm.
Well, let me challenge a little bit, right? You obviously had tools to be successful, but compared to your first go round at BYU, your first year, you said, right, it's just what you're supposed to do. You go from high school to college, but now you have a goal in mind, right? You have a dream, so to speak. All right. How much do you think, obviously the tools matter, right? And having the mindset of learning from failure and understanding that, but how much do you think the end goal, you're driving towards something, how much do you think that played a factor in your success?
100%. I mean, that and the level of maturity are probably the two biggest differences between the Shea Shipton who went to BYU at 17 and the Shea Shipton who went to the University of Utah at 27.
Yeah.
Right. Is just having myself oriented towards something.
Yeah.
And being able to see afar off again, at this point, you know, the 500 meter target of like way out there is medical school and being an anesthesiologist. That was crucial because why else would you be doing this? Why else are you putting in this effort? I wouldn't be going back to school. I wouldn't have gotten out of the military if I didn't have that goal in mind.
Yeah.
So I would say it's definitely important.
Yeah. So you're back in school, traditional school, surrounded by traditional people, and you're out here going, hey, I kind of bombed first year. Did anyone along the path when you started your kind of second stint in undergrad say there's no way to overcome that? Any naysayers out there in your world?
The very first pre-med advisor that I met with at the University of Utah.
No.
Actually.
I was hoping you would say no. What was that conversation like?
She just looked at my transcripts and I was... Well, I know I had confidence because, you know, how many people are Green Berets and how many people are really trying to get into medical school after being a Green Beret.
Yeah.
And she's just like, yeah, but your GPA is in the toilet. So I'm not telling you not to pursue your dreams, but you really should consider a different career path into the medical field. Maybe you should enroll, you know, maybe you should look at the nursing program. Maybe you should be shooting to be a PA. I was like, oh, okay. and I never met with her again. I was like, no, not you. Like,
yeah,
I don't have time for this. I'm not, I don't deal with this. Like, you're not a person that I want to have in my life.
Yeah.
And I went home and, you know, talked to my wife about it. And she's just like, yeah, I mean, she doesn't know anything because she's just being supportive. And that's really the difference, right? Is that I had a network through my family, through my wife, through my kids of people that whenever I encountered challenges like that, were there to be like, no, you're awesome. You can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. But blind loyalty and is not always the best thing to lean on. But
that is fair. Right?
But yeah, it's look, there are plenty of amazing advisors out there and there are way too many dream crushers out there, unfortunately. Did you ever reach back out to her once you got into med school and said, hey, just want to let you know where I'm going, what I'm doing.
No, that's, I don't know.
I would. I would right? do it. That's fair. Right? Yeah. I would do it to teach her.
She has a different perspective.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Hey, I wish our first conversation went a little bit differently. Maybe this gives you a little more perspective on not telling people no, because that's right. Not their job. And I don't understand. I think they have the right intentions in mind, but it's just the wrong tactics. So you're obviously successful. You're in medical school now. You're kind of winding down your MBA year, going back into fourth year soon. When you were applying to medical school, how much did those early grades come up anywhere in your interviews or anything?
Not so much in the interviews. Mm-hmm. They were far enough away. I mean, we're talking over a decade.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you're looking at my GPA on a graph, it's obviously that just ASM total recovery, right?
Yeah.
I pulled out of that and didn't have any issues because I was focused and I had a goal as far as my performance at the University of Utah.
Yeah.
Right. And so everybody that actually gave me an interview, that wasn't a thing. They wanted to talk about my military experience.
Of course.
Right. I had a story to tell. I had the narrative that I was writing about myself.
Yep.
And they wanted me to expand on that narrative. which is, as you know, that's the critical
that's what I teach
of getting in medical school, right?
Yeah.
Is that you have the story that you tell about yourself.
Yep.
And if you can successfully convey that to other individuals and they listen to it and they like it, well, then that's what they're going to focus on.
Yep.
And that's exactly what they did. They were like, I don't care about you from 2006. And let's be real. Like me from 2006 would have been a horrible med student, right? Like, there's no question about that.
Yeah.
But that's not who they're judging.
Correct.
So.
But they know that's in you. They knew that was you, and they see the new you, and they don't have any major concerns of your academic risk because now you have this several year history at University of Utah, where again you've kind of pulled a 180 and are, I'm assuming, close to a 4.0 student, if not a 4.0 student.
Yeah, I think, you know, in 80 credit hours, I had like 2 A-minuses in that.
Terrible, which is, terrible.
Yeah, right. Yep. Oh, Chem 2 coming right at the end, right in that final.
But that's all right. So they understand, right? And that's the message that I try to spread is medical schools care about grades, but it's not just a number they're looking for. They're looking for risk. What is your academic risk of your risk of not finishing medical school? And yeah, you from a decade ago, huge risk. No way any medical school is going to touch you with a sub 1.0 GPA, right? But that same person combined with this new you, right? Post-military you, have a goal you, know how to overcome failure you, is way overshadows a decade ago you. And medical schools go, great, not a risk anymore. So.
Absolutely.
And that's what I try to preach from the mountaintops. Look, is there a medical school out there that's going to look at your previous stint at BYU and go, nope, don't want to deal with this student? Sure. How many schools did you end up applying to?
Probably 35.
How many interviews did you get?
About a dozen.
A dozen. Okay. Yeah. So lots of schools liked you. Plenty. Passed, and that's okay. A dozen interviews. I'm assuming MCAT went well enough as well.
Yes, I would say my MCAT score was above average. I believe it's either a 510 or a 512. I can't.
Okay.
Well, you know, however confident I'm feeling myself.
Yeah. Today, 510 and 512 is basically the same score. So an average-ish MCAT score. The average now for matriculants is right around that 512 mark. So an average-ish MCAT score, really good upward trend in those grades, and obviously an amazing story to tell from your time in the military. Now, not everyone in the military are coming out as a Green Beret. Can tell that story well, and it sounds like you found my podcast and you have at least one of my books, so you've learned a thing or two about that storytelling. What was the most the interview book, love it, what was the most surprising good or bad that you kind of encountered during the application process or interview trail?
I would say the most surprising good was how excited so many of the interviewers were to talk to me.
Yeah.
And not just because of my history. A lot of them didn't have any knowledge of what it meant to be a Special Forces medical sergeant. Right. Mm. But just because they were genuinely interested in trying to assess who I was and if I would be a good fit at their program. And that's fantastic, because you're nervous. Even, mm-hmm. you know, as much as I'd been through in different foreign countries, like I was nervous because I'm like, this is my future. This is me. Like, this is another year of not being able to provide for my family in an already very long stint where that's going to be the case. There's a lot of stresses and you're like, I really want this to go well. And the fact that they were so friendly and inviting in so many areas was great.
Yeah,
I would say that the worst thing was, I won't name which school this was, but one of them came out and he said, I hate the medical school process. I feel like I could throw all of your applications down the stairs, pick up 100 random ones, and they would be just as good as the people that we're going to suggest. And I was like, oh, that's really rough. And I'm sorry that you feel that way about the process.
And remind me again why you're in this process.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, Yeah, that's an interesting one. Okay. Sorry for him. He obviously woke up on the wrong side of the bed that day. Look, I say it all the time, right? This process is hard. It's long, it's costly. But at the end of the day, when you put together an application that tells your story, people want to be invested and connect with you. And that's what happened with your cycle and obviously success. What was it like to get that first acceptance call or email?
Oh, it was, I couldn't believe it. Right. It was very soon after one of my first interviews. And the opportunity to call my wife and say, hey, we're at the very least, like, we're going to medical school.
Yep.
And that's it. It's full of elation, right? To just see all of that hard work pay off and to resolve, I mean, what is a high degree of uncertainty up to that point, right? Like you're talking about going through years of chaos and unknown to have faith, to hopefully reach a goal.
Mm.
And then to have that pay off and to be like, hey, we really want you to come here. And that's great.
Yeah.
I loved it. So
12 interviews, how many acceptances did you end up with?
I ended up with 4. Didn't go to all 12 interviews.
Okay. That was kinda, you're done.
I got an interview at USHU's, the military med.
Yeah.
I was like, would you like to go here? My wife's like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
We're done with that.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I want to talk about the MD MBA part of this. The question comes up a lot and students are a little unsure of that process because we have the MD PhD process, which is a whole kind of separate application process. And I think for most schools out there, you just kind of go through the normal MD process. And then once you're accepted, you kind of just raise your hand and go, hey, I'm also interested in the MBA part. When did the MBA kind of fascination creep up for you in this process?
So for me, it was something that I had decided I kind of wanted to do even before going to medical school. My wife, the amazing woman that she is, she'd been working full time. She was pregnant with our third and she was finishing up her MBA and just crushing it. And I watched the things that she was learning and the fact that she was enjoying that program and that she was growing in her leadership capabilities. And I was like, that I want that for me. Like, that's great. But I didn't know that it was even an opportunity to try to pursue as part of the MD process until we were doing clinical rotations. And one of the individuals in the class above us was like, yeah, I'll be graduating with your class. Well, why? Like, what are you doing? Why are you rolling again?
Are you a failure? Well, did you fail?
I mean, he was really solid. That's why I was like, I don't know what's going on. And he's just like, oh, I did the MBA.
Mm.
Oh, you can do that? It's like, yeah, all you have to do is apply and then talk to the deans and put in a leave of absence. And it's only a year. And I was like, I can get this done in a year instead of 2. He's like, yeah, of course. I was like, well, then maybe that's something I should look into.
Yeah. It's like a special MBA, right? It's an executive MBA versus
not for us.
No, it's not.
They're calling it a full MBA because I'm knocked out all of the core classes.
Nice.
This first year. And they said, you're essentially doing all of your elective courses via the credit hours you're doing in the MD program.
So, got it. Okay. So they're giving you kind of dual credit there.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you had that role model in your wife learning leadership that makes complete sense coming from a military background and leadership. Where do you see your career going? Are you still on the anesthesia train?
Absolutely. 100% going to be doing that. I was just filling out a ways for anesthesia rotations for fourth year before I started talking to you. I would say that the MBA is, it's fantastic because it helps me bring more to the table for my future teams, right? Mm-hmm. In both leadership and in the ability to look at problems in a different way. And so my goal is either to continue with a cardiothoracic fellowship or a pain management fellowship. And if I do the pain management, then the MBA helps me, obviously, because you're going to likely open up your own clinic and have to run your own stuff. And the MBA helps you build that kind of network that I can look back and be like, hey, it's 6 years. Who's been in real estate from this group? Tell me what I should be looking for when I'm trying to go into a commercial real estate venture and how I should structure this. And it gives me a group of individuals to do that. And I can actually read the balance sheet and look at it and do future cash flow projections and know what I'm talking about rather than just think I know what I'm talking about. Right? And then if I do the cardiothoracic anesthesiology route, then I have individuals that are going to need leadership, right? That is a team sport. When you're running ECMO and you're trying to do TEEs and there's multiple surgeons in the room, and the ability to have refined and honed those leadership skills has been a great asset from the MBA. I love it. And that translates not only into the team that you're working with, but also your patients, right? Every interaction that you have with your patients is a team interaction. And I have, you know, 5 minutes to build rapport with those people and to be like, hey, like, I'm here to take care of you. I know you've never done this before. I know it's really scary. And I promise, like, we're going to take care of you. It's going to be good. You have a dream picked out. Like, I'm ready. Like, let's go. So that having that opportunity has been good.
Yeah, that's awesome. So as you look back on your journey, this decade long journey that you've been on, with still a long road ahead, is it worth it?
I mean, I would say so far, yes. Mostly not because I've seen really the fruits, but because I think the worth is determined by your attitude regarding the journey itself, right? I don't believe in working for some future destination and that being the only thing that drives
100%.
You. That's important and it gives you a goal, but you should be taking satisfaction in being stretched and in growing and in finding your way through this, because it's more often than not, and this goes back to, you know, being a Green Beret. I've spent years and lots of blood, sweat, and tears and lots of long rucksacks and sleepless nights trying to reach this goal, only to figure out, well, I mean, maybe this goal isn't where you're going to be for very long. And if that had been the only thing that was motivating me and that I had taken pleasure in, that might have been an impediment to moving forward and to choosing a different career path. Mm. And so I'd say that just the ability to, again, prove to myself after experiencing failures that I really can do these things. And that you can do these things. If you're listening to this and you're, you know, hopefully you're motivated to continue that journey into medical school, because that's what it's about, is knowing that you can do it, experiencing that success and seeing yourself transform from a pre-med student and somebody who's got some life experience into a physician who's there to take care of people.
Love it. For those listening right now who are in your former shoes or boots, we'll call them boots. what recommendation do you have for them? What words of wisdom do you have for them to keep going and to find those successes every day?
I would say find what motivates you and use that to instill discipline, right? And I say this to everybody that I've been able to mentor into medical school. A perfect example that you don't have to be all that intelligent in order to get into medical school and to, you know, make your dreams a reality. You just have to be dedicated enough to not give up and to keep putting one foot in front of the other. It's, like I said, a long ruck march is the best way to describe it. And as my father asked me after I got done with selection, so what was selection like? It was like spending 12 hours a day pushing a three-wheeled Jeep up hills full of sand, right? Like, you're going to do it. It's going to suck. It's going to be difficult. But as long as you know why you're doing it, you have those motivators, that will be enough to sustain you in that journey. And then I would say that nobody does this journey alone, right? I 100% would not have been able to stick it through and to overcome those failures had it not been for my family and the friends around me. Right. So if you have that peer group of individuals who are positive, who are motivated to achieve their goals, you're significantly more likely to achieve your own goals, right? That success finds success, and that success breeds more success. That's what you're looking for in your life. And so find that group of people who are just as motivated as you and that are there to accomplish those things, right? Know what your story is and what you're, how you're going to sell yourself to those medical school search communities. Be able to talk about yourself confidently, like all the basic medical school, like how to get in there things. But it's basic, but there are so many people that don't know how to do it, yeah, right? That haven't thought about that. That this is, I'm telling a story. And if you have your story, then people will listen.
All right. So there you have it. Again, that's Shay, who's pursuing his MD, MBA. It's a question we get a lot, this whole MBA world. And as Shay mentioned, right, at least at University of Colorado, and it's at a lot of places, you just go through the normal process of getting into medical school, and then you go, hey, I'm interested in getting an MBA as well. How can I do that? Let me know. Thank you, Shay, for taking some time out of your busy schedule to chat with us. Hopefully this led to some great inspiration, motivation for you out there listening to this right now. I hope you enjoyed this episode and got some encouragement on your path to medical school. And don't forget to check out BlueprintMCAT.com, our sponsor here on the Pre-Med Years podcast. Thank you, Blueprint, for your support throughout the years. Go to BlueprintMCAT.com today. Sign up for that free account. Have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the Pre-Med Years.
This is MedEd Media.